Want to cut cooling bills without cutting comfort? Lower utility costs and enjoy cool and consistent comfort with a highly efficient air conditioner from Luxair. With Luxair's consumer rebate program, educators, nurses, first responders, military personnel, and veterans can enjoy exclusive rebates on qualifying purchases of Luxair equipment. To learn more, call G-Team Mechanical at 765-376-3042 or visit gteamhvac.com. They'll recommend a system tailored to your home that provides comfort, energy savings, and lasting performance.
This is Trackside with Kirk Cavan and Kevin Lee on 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan.
Green flag flies as Scott McLaughlin gets the Children's of Alabama Indy Grand Prix underway. He rolls to the carousel, setting up for turn number two, and we have contact at the rear of the field. A couple of cars flying off course. Among those is Stingray Robb as the leaders set sail for turn number five.
And Pato spins. He carried way too much speed. He had to get on the brakes to avoid running into Christian Lundgaard, and that car swooped around. He avoids hitting the wall. He drives through the gravel trap, but he is going to tumble all the way to nearly the rear of the field. In fact, only Jack Harvey and Stingray Robb did not pass Pato Award.
David got an issue on the track. It looks like one of the, for lack of a better term, the mannequins that they have hanging around here at various places
underneath
around Barber
bridge,
Motorsports Park is kind of falling to the race in front of the edge of the track.
Whoa! Rasmussen! Around he goes. Great avoidance from four other cars and drivers.
Oh, are we going to have a caution with five to go?
Scott McLaughlin with a 1.3-second lead. Will Power has opened up his advantage to about a second over Linus Lundqvist. Comes off of turn number 17 for the final time, and he'll go to the start-finish line. The Advance Auto Parts checkered flag flies, and Scott McLaughlin goes to victory lane.
And I'm really proud. It's been pretty full on the week, and I'm just super proud of everyone. I'll just keep enjoying it, keep having fun, and see if we can get a few more wins along the way.
Hey, you know what day tomorrow is? It's May in Indianapolis. Welcome to Trackside, 93.5, 107.5, The Fan in Indianapolis. And we started off with NTT IndyCar Series highlights from the Children's of Alabama Indy Grand Prix at Barber Motorsports Park in Birmingham Sunday afternoon. A highly entertaining, very physical IndyCar race. Yes, the pole sitter won the race and led the most laps, but far from decided at the start with three different strategies involved. Much to talk about on the program tonight. And, a few things off track to still get to. Hi there, welcome. Trackside with Kevin Lee, Kurt Cavan, Elijah Robertson is in our studios in Indianapolis. Kurt, it's like the old days. I'm on before a Pacers game. I get to throw it to Mark Boyle later on tonight for game five between the Pacers and Bucks from Milwaukee, 9:30 tip, but I will be tucked in bed about 2 minutes after the game is over tonight, unlike the old days.
I thought you were going to say you were going to be in bed 2 minutes after the first tip.
That is another possibility that I do plausibly live tomorrow morning. I nearly did that last week. So as some of, I saw this on Twitter, what game was this? Game two was on NBA TV. Unless you're in Indianapolis, then it's blacked out. So I don't have the option of getting Bally Sports on my television provider. It's not available on YouTube TV. I love my Pacers, but I have made decisions. I feel I am willing to pay $6-8 a month for sports programming. 20 I have a limit somewhere, so I've not done that. And they've had some issues with the app, so I can't get Pacers games.
Me neither.
I couldn't get NBA TV either because it was blacked out. And then I saw a workaround because the re-airs are not blacked out, and it was re-airing at 3 a.m., so I shut down the Twitter box at the beginning of the second quarter when the game was still closed, stayed off social media as I got up, woke up early, like 6 a.m., and I'm watching the game, and I got midway through the second quarter before I noticed. Somehow I hadn't noticed for a while. They had the final on the crawl.
Oh, it's terrible.
that was the spoiler alert for me, so that didn't work out. I'm assuming I'll listen to Mark and Eddie and Pat tonight, but if I stay up. But I'm assuming this one's on TNT.
I think so. So, I mean, in 2 hours, we'll know, and you know, we can listen to it.
I hope it's not blacked out. I got to watch game four because I was in Birmingham and Atlanta. I watched that on the travel, although I heard some other people saying, no, I think it was on here. It wasn't blacked out.
I saw
a comment that they were way behind the Bally Sports feed. So we always support or encourage supporting the local broadcast for Chris and Quinn, but I ain't got that option. So there's that going. I'm looking forward to that tonight. I have greatly enjoyed getting to see Pacers basketball up close. Ready for the week ahead, ready for the month of May. Couple of notes before we get into the business items. We go daily. I learned this today. It's my fault for not checking. We usually do, but just wanted to check. We go daily next Monday. So it's the first full week in May is usually when we go daily from 7 until 8. So Monday, May 6th, we'll be on at 7, 1 hour each night. And then Beyond the Bricks with Jake Query and Mike Thompson will be on following us. And here's the question I had. The Pacers have not been playing in May for a little while. Are we going to be preempted? And we are not. We are, not only am I back on before Pacers games, I'm back on WIBC some this month. So if there is a Pacers game that will continue to air on 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan, and then this program and Beyond the Bricks, those nights would air on 93.1 WIBC. And podcast will still be the same. The streaming would be different, so it would be a different length. So the 93 WIBC website compared to the 107.5 The Fan website. So we look forward to that because obviously schedule is going to be TBD here on out with the Pacers because it depends on what they do and what others do, but it won't impact us. We'll be on at 7 o'clock every weeknight in the month of May. So looking forward to that. The other thing I'll mention, and this is more of a plea, Rev, benefiting the IU Health Foundation, is coming up this Saturday night, and I'm looking for two. I got to go for the first time last year and greatly enjoyed it. I didn't think I was going to be in town. I had a couple of things going on, potentially, like the Kentucky Derby, and I've got suite passes to Formula One this weekend available, I believe, but I really don't want to get on an airplane, so I'm going to stay home. And if somebody offers us the invite, I am available and willing. I'm not running the mini, so I can walk. At least I don't think I'm running the mini. Sometimes I wake up and decide to go ahead and show up and look for an entry, but I don't think I'm going to. So that's on Saturday. That makes it feel like it's the month of May. And then we are, what, 9 days away from Cars on Track, Friday and Saturday for the Sanseo Grand Prix is the name this year, correct?
That's right, Sanseo. It's it really does feel like May on a day like today. Beautiful in Indianapolis, if you're listening across the country or elsewhere beyond the borders. Beautiful day in Indianapolis, much like we would prefer to have for practice days on the Oval and for the road course race, for that matter. Although the road course isn't contingent on beautiful weather, we can still see some great action, even if it's slipping and sliding a little bit in moisture. But it was one of those beautiful days. And the talk of the office today was taking that calendar and flipping the page. And when you get to May 1, it just sends a different kind of spirit through the city of Indianapolis. The decal going up on the JW Marriott downtown, very much a sign that it is time for the 108th running. The ticket office has been bouncing when I've been in the atrium there of the administration building, and you know, just the overall feel that it's time. And so we've got certainly a lot of energy in the series right now. It has a lot to do with the reigning champion of the Indianapolis 500 and the questions that he'll surely get as we move into the month of May. But you know, we've seen, and we're going to talk largely about the 500 in this vein, but you know, we've seen some of the best Indy 500s over the last 10 years, and I see no reason why that wouldn't continue. And we kind of saw what should be a great preview of the Sanseo Grand Prix last weekend and at Barber Motorsports Park. And honestly, You know, those races have always been, we talked about this a lot, those races have always been better than maybe the reputation of the racetrack would give it. Those races have been outstanding. And this one in particular, and of course, we always got a memory that's short. You know, we say, oh, that was the best Barber Motorsports Park race we've seen. And I don't know, because they're all different for different reasons. But this one, just a lot of bumping and banging and guys getting aggressive, and a lot to cover tonight. But I was really entertained by what we saw over the weekend.
I thought the race was awesome. And if you just look at a box score and you see the pole sitter won the race and led the most laps, you might think that this was never really in doubt. But it was very much in doubt. And ultimately, and Scott McLaughlin wins the race. And we had what you need. You need multiple strategies. And we had two very distinct strategies. And then a couple on a third strategy. Now, one strategy can work as long as it's not the one fuel saving. That's our nightmare. You know, that's what we're hoping for, entertainment. So I think IndyCar and the people on the broadcast, we are just hoping that we do not see 10 laps of caution in the first stint. Because if you see 10 laps of caution, two cautions of mediocre length before we get to lap 15, even if you were planning on running full fuel and going hard, you're going to change, and then you have to. And then it becomes a two-stopper, and then saving fuel the rest of the way, and unfortunately kind of follow the leader. So we got the first caution early, and then I said this, and I don't know this to be 100% true, but I think so. I think Scott McLaughlin was hedging a little bit. I know their plan was, and the way you could tell by the way it started, the front three in the race were not saving fuel. Guys like Townsend and Hinch can tell that. And when I listen to Scanners, you know, they're talking about it. They're telling their driver, all right, this is very clear. Fourth on back is saving. They're doing a two-stop strategy. The front three are running hard. First caution comes out. One, that makes it a little bit easier for the two-stoppers to be able to make their fuel numbers so they can go a little bit harder. But then I started hearing McLaughlin being told about fuel. You're making a good number. And if you're not worried about fuel, because if you're doing a three-stopper, it's a pretty big window. You know, since you can make it on two, obviously you could come in on lap four, come in on lap two and still make it. You'd have to fuel save. But, you know, clearly once you get past lap six or seven, there's not fuel save needed. You're going longer to leave some different options open, to shorter fill, to make use of tires and not have, and on and on and on. But they were talking about fuel. So that told me, and not a big number, but it was, I think, all right, if we get one more caution here early on, before the two stoppers, before the three stoppers would make their first stop, we might change to saving fuel. They were still going good enough. And then he was still kind of in that ballpark. I think McLaughlin took his first stop lap 27 or 28. It's a 90-lap race, pretty simple. 30, 60, 90. Maybe make one up somewhere around there. So he was still close enough. If there had been a decent amount of caution in the next stint, maybe he can stretch it all to way to 60. Then there was a caution in the middle of that stint, and they debated it, whether to stay out or come in. And Scott asked twice, and Kyle Moyer responded, we're still doing the numbers, we're still thinking about it. Ultimately, they came in, turned out to be the right decision, but it almost wasn't. So the two stoppers, Alex Palou, I think, was in place to win the race. And Alex Palou had a real quandary too, because he was fast. He still doesn't know why he wasn't fast in round two of qualifying. He said they made no changes to the car. It was the fastest in the first round of qualifying. It was not particularly quick in round two. Something happened, potentially out of their control in that one. So he's starting with a fast car from, I think, 10th. And from where they're at, they're planning, from at one point, they were planning on a three-stopper. But I think we played that radio on the broadcast. Because of the cautions that had come up, they started telling him a number, and then it became save. And that was going to play out, and they were right in position, and they weren't going to need to make their last stop until somewhere beyond lap 60. Then a caution comes out on lap 55. Another dilemma. What do you do? Do you stay out like Santino Ferrucci and Linus Lundqvist did, who were on a different strategy? They came in on that first caution on lap 7, had a little bit more wiggle room. Essentially, at that point, it was, you know, we got to come in, because if you don't, then you're different than everybody else, and that's the safest bet. And we know this guy's good at making fuel, and there's probably going to be another caution somewhere along the way. But he comes in, along with many others, on the two-stop strategy on 56. If that caution doesn't come for another four laps, I think Alex Palou probably wins the race. Makes sense? Agreed.
Yeah. No, I agree. Totally. And Felix Rosenqvist.
He got a late caution at the end to help him get to the end, because he was limping at the end. And he was being told a fuel number, and he laughed a couple of times about trying to get there. So would he have made it? Probably would have. But he probably wouldn't have finished fifth. He lost one spot late in that last stint.
Yeah, Felix Rosenqvist got him late on a kind of similar strategy, but you know, that he was still in the two-stop range as well. So yeah, I thought it was Palou's race, and then the caution comes out just a little too early for those guys.
And then if that caution doesn't come out, I still think it's up in the air. I probably should rephrase that. I don't know that Palou was going to win, but I think he was going to be racing McLaughlin off the pit lane. The blend was going to be the big story, a little bit like last year's race between McLaughlin and Grosjean, mixing it up after their last stop. I think it would have been in question, and I can't remember what the difference is. We're always kind of looking at how far back they are and understanding that the time lost on pit lane is about 27 seconds if you nail your pit stop. So that's how you can tell whether somebody's going to come out in front of somebody else.
Well, you started this part of the conversation by saying, you know, when you have two distinct fuel strategies or ways to attack the 90 laps, and we had that. When you have different strategies, you have some chess being played, and you're watching how some people are playing the board a certain way and some people are playing the board a different way. And that's just intriguing. And what's really fun about it, and it's not exactly 50-50, but we pretty much saw the field, more so last year, there was a closer divide between those that took the three-stop pathway and those that took the two-stop. In this case, there were a few more people on the two-stop strategy. But the point is, you had a way for...
I think it was still pretty split.
Was it pretty split?
I'm trying to count the numbers.
Now,
I'm only seeing 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 that finished the race on the two-stop strategy. I think Rossi might have been on that as well. And I don't remember about Stingray and Pietro. So, yeah, pretty even.
Yeah. So the point is, when there's two different ways to skin a cat, as they say, it gets really, you know, you've already got speed, you've already got aggressiveness, you already got the things that are fun about the sport, and then you add strategy as well. And the strategy came really close to being just about perfect. Had that caution, that second caution, just come a little bit later, we'd have had a barn burner. And it was good as it was. And yeah, very intriguing. And as I said, a lot of aggression. Nothing more enjoyable than watching, you know, a great champion like Scott Dixon kind of get roughed up a little bit, maybe of his own doing, but him complaining and spinning in
showing
turn five
human.
And
showing he's human.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, we saw Colton Herta kind of get roughed up by Santino Ferrucci, which was good fun. And not because it's Colton, just because, you know, you got the top two in the championship, Dixon and Colton Herta coming into it, and they're fighting and scrapping just like everybody else. And so, yeah, we like a little contact and a little aggression and a little hate on the radio. And, you know, Dixon's complaining about Graham Rahal, and I'm sure Colton Herta, even though I didn't hear his radio, I'm sure he wasn't pleased with Santino. And honestly, you could go through the list and just about everybody had a moment, particularly in turn five at the exit of five, just getting shoved off the racetrack a little bit. That's good. A little aggression is good.
That's one where I get it. If you're the one being shoved off, you are not happy, because it's one thing if you try to pass on the outside and they're tight to the apex, but when they're right in the middle of the road You know, it's pretty clear what the intent is, but it's also understood. You try to pass on the outside at your own peril. And unless there is a stated rule in the series, like there is in F-1600, where you must leave a full car width available because that's a development series. It's either a development series or a gentleman series. And the idea is, let's don't go running people off the road. That's not what this is. You know, this is the top level of professional motorsports where have at it. It's not have at it. That's not what I'm saying. But the rules are a little bit more lenient. Now, if you drive people that way, so my opinion is race control is handling that. I don't really want to see penalties. I get it. If it was my driver being shoved off, I wouldn't feel too good about it. But it probably comes back to you. So if you want to go that way, you just understand you'd probably not want to try to pass on the outside because they're going to do you that way too. And then back to the strategies. But, you know, they got the lap count right. 90 laps, that's it. Give you two options, and both options can work. I like the fact that those trying to go fast prevailed. That's good.
Well, it does. The 90 laps does work, but you made the point, and this is exactly how I've always felt about lap distances. And generally, we can find what is ideal in a perfect situation. But if you have one more fairly lengthy caution in that first 15 laps or so, then it wouldn't have mattered. It was 80, 85, yeah. 90, 95 laps. It wouldn't have mattered. We'd have been in a different situation. I mean, obviously, it would have made some difference. But then the point is 90 laps wouldn't have been the perfect number because everybody would have then been in big fuel saving mode. So it just kind of depends on the cautions. And you know, we'd have had a great, great battle between the two fuel strategies in this one had that second or that last caution just come about two laps later. And then Pillow and Rosenquist and those on the two-stop strategy could have raced harder at the end and might have had a better chance. Although at that point, you know, the other thing that Team Penske did in McLaughlin's car was have brand new sticker reds for the fight at the end. And that really was a difference maker for them, in addition to the lead they built up.
So he had it on the next to the last stint.
Didn't he finish? He finished with sticker reds.
I'll have to look at the lap chart. I thought he put them on like lap. I thought he put them on the second stop. I think the third stop he went back to scuffed reds. We'll see if we can look up the Firestone chart here in a moment. So it's 1-2 for Penske. And we'll get to everything else in a moment, maybe circle back to Penske. So let's talk about everybody else before we talk about Penske. And how about Linus Lundqvist? And I called his last pit stop, and he was leading the race, and he was off strategy, and we were kind of debating how much do we need to talk about this. And, you know, that's one of those where these do become confusing. But, you know, I said, hey, maybe he's going to, you know, have a decent day, 10th to 15th, which would be a decent day. But he did have sticker alternates for the last stint, and he had more fuel, and everybody else needed another caution to be able to race him. So good for Linus Lundqvist. He even said, I'm not sure my car was all that good this weekend, but he just had extra abilities at his disposal on that last stint, and hey, some confidence now.
Well, and let's don't discard the fact that Linus Lundqvist is going to be very good in this series. You know, we look at IndyNex by Firestone champions over the years, and a lot of them have been very capable, but didn't have a good kind of entryway into the sport or have a good solid foundation to start. He's learning from, you know, in addition to what he did last year with Meyer Shank. You know, at Chip Ganassi Racing, he's got Pillow and Dixon to lean on, plus all the internal support that he's got. He's going to be outstanding. I don't know if he can win a race this year, but I would say by next year, he's going to be a race winner. And I wouldn't be surprised if he got one late this year as well.
I talked to him maybe on Saturday morning and just kind of a, how's it going conversation, because he's one of those, because of what he did in Indy Next, in back-to-back seasons, and what he did in his three races, it was the best performance that the Meyer Shank team had all year. You know, I think a lot of us thought that he could win a race this year, and he would pretty quickly be competitive, top 10, things like that. So, you know, I just kind of wondered how he was feeling, and if the sledding is a little bit harder than he expected, 19th to 23rd at St. Pete. Long Beach, start 17th, finish 13th, was okay at Thermal, and then he qualifies 19th at Barber. And he was basically saying, yeah, it's a little bit harder than I expected. And I said, is it part of just the adjustment? You know, it goes back to think about Rosenquist when he got to the McLaren car. Nobody gets to test an IndyCar before they sign with someone. And sometimes somebody's car and the way they do things just doesn't fit you. And he wasn't going down that path yet, but it was, yeah, it's hard. And when you get it, you're going to be better for it, but there are going to be longer growing pains. I surmised out of this that there is a chance that there are some programs and cars that might be easier to drive right from the beginning, but they have a ceiling. The ceiling is definitely higher with a Ganassi car. And you might also be at, and he said this too, that there are things that Dixon and Palou can do that I can't do. I can't drive their car. We know what a fast car does, but I am not experienced enough to drive the car that Dixon and Palou were doing. So in that fashion, he is all on his own. He doesn't have the full benefit of what these two championship teammates have. And maybe on another team with a mere mortal as his teammate, sharing a little bit more information. And then he also pointed to, he said, you know, I kind of look at where Marcus Armstrong is, and it looks like in year two, he's starting to figure it out. So I took that to Marcus, and he said, yes and no. What it really is for me is, I didn't know any track last year, and every other driver coming up, like Linest, knows at least two-thirds of the track. So that's been the biggest thing for me. I also think that Marcus has a little bit more confidence, and that's why I told the story late in the race about his physio, really performance coach. An awful lot of drivers have mental coaches. And I've talked to Angela Cullen now twice, and people would recognize her if they watched Formula One. She was always the person carrying Lewis Hamilton's helmet. She did a lot more than carry Lewis Hamilton's helmets. And she's doing a lot more than that for Marcus Armstrong. And that's what I've kind of sensed on Marcus over the last, especially last year. He was too hard on himself that he would be close. And even when it went pretty well, it was almost more negative than positive. And now I'm seeing the other side of that. And I think he has more confidence. He got an okay result this weekend, 9th. But that's because he was on massive fuel save. He's not where Dixon and Palou are on that. If this was a straight up normal race, he was going to finish 5th or 6th, which would have been his best result. By the way, McLaughlin did run used reds. The advantage was, though, it was a short stint. He didn't pit until 76, so he only had to do 14 or 15 laps to finish on the used reds.
Okay. It was the stint before that when he was busting them with the new ones. But I think Lundqvist and Armstrong are both going to take big strides as we go through this season. And again, I'm not sure either one of them can win a race because I'm not sure they can beat their own two teammates on a normal day. So, you know, you always have to beat your teammates. And if you only got one superhero to beat, but you got two of them there. So that's a challenge, which I guess has always been what's really impressive to me about McLaughlin. I mean, McLaughlin's done this and beaten two heavyweights. I mean, he's beat two superheroes in Newgarden and Power, finished ahead of both of those two in points. And I mean, I really thought, I mean, I'm going to be the first to raise my hand and say this. I didn't think this is what we would get from Scott McLaughlin. I thought he would be good. And obviously being a Team Penske was going to be a big help. I just didn't think he could beat his two teammates. Those two guys are just outstanding, Newgarden and Power. And I just didn't think McLaughlin had enough to be that kind of guy. And he really is good.
A lot of people thought we hyped him too much that first year or two. And some of us, like me, were going by what other people that were familiar with him said. So I was going on, I don't know, supercars. I know he won every race, but I don't know what the caliber is. But I just had enough people telling me this guy is special. So I went with that. Turns out we were right, because that's it. It's one thing to win in a Penske car. You are supposed to win in a Penske car. But he's able, some of the time, to be two of the greatest ever. That's what Will Power is. And that's what Joseph Newgarden will be when it's done. And even if he never does another race, he's won as many races as Rick Mears. You know, he's won one fewer than several of the big hitters. You know, he's won a couple of Castro Neves. He's almost in the top 10. So he is what he is.
I think you have to say Newgarden is already one of the best ever. I mean, he's not done.
That's fair. Yeah,
I mean, he's in the top 12 of all-time race winners with two championships and an Indy 500 win. I don't know how much. That's one of the best.
Yeah. Let's look, before we get back to Team Penske and everything else going on, Felix Rosenqvist is backing it up. He has qualified in the Firestone Fast Six in all 3 points races. Pole for the exhibition race, finished, what, third in that race? I think, and has finished in the top 10 in all of these races. He didn't have a chance to compete really at Long Beach because of a brake issue. And in this case, he qualifies fifth. He finishes fourth, first on his strategy. That's a way to look at it. He beat Alex Palou on the same strategy.
Yeah. No, I you know, it's one of those things, and now I'm not going to get the phraseology right, but once is a fluke. Twice is, you know, something else, and third is pretty impressive. And he did it the first race, and you thought, okay, maybe he's just, you know, whatever. But he's backed it up now 4 times in a row and looked really good.
And he's the best of the Andretti-associated cars. It's reminding me a little bit of when Colton Herta was driving for Carlin with Andretti technology. Was it Carlin? No, I'm sorry.
No,
it was Harding Steinbrenner.
Yeah, Harding Steinbrenner.
He never drove for Carlin. Harding Steinbrenner. And, you know, some of the Andretti drivers were wondering, well, wait a minute, why is the satellite program beating us in qualifying a decent amount of time with that kid? Well, one, the kid's really good, and I don't have the answer for that. Maybe it's because they simply just looked at it and said, yep, looks good. Let's do it. Let's stick to the basics here. It's not like the Andretti's have been lost, and they were okay this weekend. And Rosenqvist had a lost weekend until qualifying. You know, he lost an engine early in practice, but always said he felt pretty good. But that's been one of the big storylines of the season, that Rosenqvist is backing it up. And then you start to wonder, as I kind of jump around, one of the teams where it's not going so well is his former team. Does Arrow McLaren miss Felix Rosenqvist? He didn't have great results with them, but do they miss having him aboard supporting?
There's always a rock. There's always a rock in the organization that, and it's certainly a rock that can be overlooked. And we've talked about this a lot over the years. Brian Herta was kind of that rock in the Andretti camp that was just overlooked. I mean, the amount of testing he did, even within races, he would be their test pilot, so to speak, and trying, you know, the different strategy or the different setup. I mean, the amount of contribution wasn't showing up in the box score with Brian Herta. And then you talk to people who have teamed with Brian, who worked with Brian, and they just marvel at him. And maybe that's kind of what we're seeing with Felix. It's still maybe too early to kind of draw that comparison, but it certainly bears watching as we move forward, because Felix, well, you know, he came to us meaning this series, and we heard so many good things, and Dixon was so impressed with him early on, and then it just never really happened, and it didn't really happen with two very good teams, you know, McLaren and Ganassi, and you just wondered, maybe people were wrong. Maybe he's just not elite. He sure looks pretty good.
His rookie season.
Well,
he finished sixth, I think, in the championship. But after that,
yeah. But after you stack those two stints with those two teams, and they're not as glorious as maybe you would have expected. Let's put it that way.
Okay, so we'll leave it there for now. We'll get back through the rest of the box score and some other goods and bads, and we need to talk about Team Penske on track, off track, other things. Get some of your questions coming up at KevinLee23 at Kurt Cavan. On the Xbox and Twitter and plenty more, all on the way. Trackside 93.5, 107.5 The Fan.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Hi, this is Alexander Rossi, and you're listening to Trackside.
Okay, segment number two. We'll continue talking about the race we just saw on Sunday at Barber Motorsports Park in Birmingham, Alabama, and also everything else going on, because they do kind of tie together. So how do we want to get into this? Because there are a lot of things going on. When we last left you, we talked last, I guess the show was on Wednesday, when we had first been alerted that Team Penske's two of their drivers had vacated their results at St. Petersburg, DQ'd for race winner Joseph Newgarden and Scott McLaughlin, who finished third in that race. No points, a fine. Will Power lost 10 points, effectively two, because he moved up spots to ultimately finish second. I think Power finished fourth in that race on the road, but ended up finishing second. Pato Award was given the win. He has now won a race this season without leading a lap this season. We'll get to Errol McLaren again coming up in a bit. So when we last talked, we still had a lot more questions. The only statement we had was that we left in software from testing we should not have, and intent wasn't really spoken of. And then since then, Tim Cindric and Team Penske have said that this was an accident. It was simply a copy and paste situation, that they developed a new type of code. And correct me when you think I'm off on here, because I'm just kind of summarizing. And there have, you know, honestly, there have been a couple of versions through this, and it has been massively confusing to try to present this in a fair way, in an accurate way. And when I say fair, I mean to Team Penske and also to the people, because the paddock doesn't believe them. So we're trying to kind of present there. And I'll just be honest on that. I didn't find anybody that works for another team that said, and I know they're out there, because I know AJ Foyt told Jenna Fryer or someone else. Maybe
nope,
it was Jenna.
Jenna,
the Associated Press, that I believe them. And I'll get to that too, because everything that has been said, I like the way Townsend Bell explained this. Why, while highly improbable, and Team Penske has admitted that you know, we get it. You may not believe this. This is an outrageous story, but it's the truth, is what they've been saying. So while highly improbable that this perfect storm of circumstances happened, it is possible. It is possible that this happened and it was simply a mistake. So we got through you had something in hybrid testing that you didn't want to have to get anybody to turn, push to pass on and off. So we make it available all the time. And when the new season started, we accidentally copy and pasted it onto the cars and had it for St. Pete. And we've heard the team wasn't aware of it until Long Beach warm up. And we were going down that path and it was okay. I can see this. Still need to hear from the drivers. Didn't really need to hear from Will Power because he did not use it. That's why he was not penalized harshly. I think Scott McLaughlin's explanation, you're able, if you don't want to believe him, you don't have to believe him. You can say that too. But I think generally a lot of people said, all right, this is plausible. He used it for less than 2 seconds near the end of a restart lap. And I think I said this last week. One, we found out the driver sometimes just hit the button out of habit or hoping that an IndyCar made a mistake and left it on for everybody. I think, two, at the end of an outlap, after you've been in a battle for 45 seconds, you might forget, am I still on the outlap or is this lap two? So all seems very plausible, and I think it's also possible for 1.9 seconds, depending on where you hit it, you might not have noticed it. I don't know if Scott answered that directly. I did not ask him whether he noticed it or not, but he just said, yeah, I hit it, and I shouldn't have, and I accept the penalties. But I did not know that we had it on there. And then Joseph's meeting with the media. So it started to make some sense, too. We wondered, why didn't we get a statement from Joseph? Waiting a long time to speak to this. We really need to hear him. And a no comment is not going to be great. I like the approach he had, because we can't get into intent. Somebody else can craft a statement for you. Joseph said, I don't want a statement. I want to speak to people. I want them to hear me. I want them to be able to ask questions and explain how we got here. But then the wording of something along the lines of, somehow some of us on the two team convinced ourselves that push to pass was now available on restarts because of the rule change at Thermal. Now, again, that is somewhat plausible because there was a rule change at Thermal. And I know a couple of people have said, well, wait a minute, that didn't come out until March 14th after the St. Petersburg race. Yeah, but I bet the memo was sent to the paddock before that. I'm going to guess the teams received that at some point before St. Pete weekend. Looking ahead, we got the press release, and the general public may have found out after that fact. I can't disprove it. So that's, I think, where I'm at this point, and it's up for everyone else. And you've seen the comments from other drivers and from some other team owners and so forth, but I cannot disprove it. It does seem odd that such a button-up team let this slip through, that no one noticed this. It's almost like you can't, is this phrased rightly? You can't prove a negative, or you can't disprove a negative. Which way does that go? But, you know, if they didn't see it, they didn't see it. Seems like they would have, but it is possible. Now it's going to be up to everyone else. And I think this is a paddock issue. Got a lot of questions about, you know, is this still going to be a story for the Indy 500? 95% of the people watching the Indy 500, not interested in this and don't care. And obviously, this did not move the needle for the national audience. If you've seen the television number, I know some people thought that that would have an impact. My feeling was maybe we get a few of our casuals that don't watch every week to tune in. But if anything, I fear that the real casual heard us trying to explain this at the top of the show, and it's like, I'm out. I don't know what you're talking about. Or that it's just a negative, that it's just a negative, that, you know, cheating, and you just see the headline out of all this. So I'm not in the camp that thinks this is good for business. I do think it's going to still be a topic of conversation in the paddock, especially with the competitors and the hardcore fan base that's listening to our show. It's not going away. Big picture, I don't know that it resonates a whole lot longer with the mainstream audience. What do, as they like to say, people really invested in the sport? You know, what does Honda think about this? We know how they think about cheating. I think essentially Roger Penske, he's already had a meeting with team owners. He may not need to speak publicly on exactly how this happened, but he probably does need to tell everyone else. And he may have already done that. But I think that's probably going to be pretty important moving forward, what is said privately to the other teams, because of the elephant in the room and the dynamic that this team, their ownership, also owns and operates the series. Kudos to the series. So my first thought when I saw this was, all right, somebody found out about it and they had to do something. Otherwise, they'd want to sweep this under the rug. Maybe I haven't heard this, but I did not hear anyone tell me, yep, we found out about this and we alerted them and we said, you got to fix it or we will, or we're going to blab. I'm not aware of that happening. I think IndyCar found this. So in some ways, to me, that I think that's a really good sign that they have shown this is highly uncomfortable. Has to be for everybody involved. And they said, doesn't matter. Jay Fry calls Roger Penske when he's on an airplane coming back from an international event. and says, this is what we found. And kind of sounds like Roger just said, you do what you have to do. And then you talk to Tim Cendric and you move on, and this is where we're at.
Yeah, the timing is interesting because we do come into, as we've talked about at the top of the show, this is May 1, or tomorrow is, and Joseph is the defending champion of the Indy 500. And while the media horde is not like it was back in not too long ago, you're still going to have people asking questions of Joseph. Their first chance they have to ask questions of Joseph, and the Associated Press is not going to let this go until they feel like the story's been exhausted. So it does come, you know, if this been June and we were heading to Road America for the next race and then Mid-Ohio and Toronto and whatever else was to follow, that might have been a different thing. But, you know, the Indy 500 has a way of putting a spotlight on something, and it certainly will come at a bad time for Team Penske to be, you know, Team Penske should be going, you know, in its publicity should be talking about a record, you know, a record extending 20th Indianapolis 500 victory this month of May, and being the defending champion and having yet another of its drivers as the defending champion, and, you know, having Joseph showcased at every opportunity. And you just get the sense that maybe they'll pump the brakes a little bit on, you know, showcasing and lifting up your reigning series champion the way you normally would. You don't know that, but you just have that sense. So it's, you know, and you touched on it. Team Penske has always operated in a Penske perfect world. I mean, that's their reputation. It is Roger's reputation. It's how he does things. And whether this was an accident, I mean, even if it was just a completely plausible situation and an accident, the problem is, you know, you've got an organization that's prided itself on being Penske perfect. And that doesn't, those two things don't connect very well.
And let's also understand this. Any team in motorsport where there are always gray areas, and tech is confusing. This, I'm not saying this is a gray area. It's not. But any team that is successful in every motorsport category I have been involved in, the successful team is accused of cheating. That's just the way it is. And this applies to other teams that have success. You know, some people think that I got asked this question on 100 Days to Indy yesterday, and then I heard this mentioned in the paddock. No one or others don't believe that Ganassi and Dixon can make the fuel that they make. They must be cheating. That kind of thing is always alleged. I think finding fuel capacity would be pretty easy to catch in tech, but I don't know. So this is nothing new. So keep that in mind when you hear the paddock say, we don't believe them, because they're already going to be predisposed. Oh, these guys always beating us. They must be doing something in that regard. And then I also go back to, I think we mentioned this last week, and this is why it certainly is possible. If you were going to do something outside the rules, you would not do something like this. It's too easy to catch. So that's kind of been the answer. Do you think we're that stupid? Because there is a gray area. There always is a gray area in motorsports where if you get caught, it's not obvious. And you can make an argument, well, no, this is how we interpreted the rule. No one can argue that this rule could be interpreted any other way. So, you know, I kind of go back to that. And the final thought I'll have on this is I like Joseph Newgarden, and I always have. I've known him since he was a kid, and I really personally feel for him. I don't know. I'm so confused. We are all so confused with this. And I'm honestly worried about Joseph right now. And I hope he is in the right space, because he referenced some things like this at St. Pete coming into the season, and why he eliminated, you know, why he unfollowed everyone on Twitter, and why there's no more bus bros, and he's eliminating distractions. And I think he's alluded to, he's a very private person. He's alluded to some things going on that I just kind of had to deal with. So this ain't helping. And he did not look comfortable all weekend, and this is going to be very difficult, and you're right. While at the Indy GP, I think it will be somewhat business as usual, there are still out-of-town reporters, and he is going to have to deal with this a little bit, and they're going to have to work hard at this. So you know, I'm biased in that fact. I like Joseph. I want him to do well, and I am, you know, I'm just hoping that all this is as they say it, and maybe we get a little more information moving forward on how this happened and get back to the way things are. So others will feel differently on that front. Zach Brown has a different opinion. And Chip Ganassi tweeted things, and drivers have tweeted things on that front. Okay, a little bit behind in this segment. We'll look ahead to hour two and more coming up. Trackside 93.5, 107.5, The Fan.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Hi, this is Colton Herta, and you're listening to Trackside on 93.5 and 107.5, The Fan.
Trackside 93.5, 107.5, The Fan in Indianapolis, one day away from the month of May. Thanks for staying with us tonight. Ahead of Pacers basketball, coming up an hour from now, we get set for Game 5. Mark Boyle, Eddie Gill, Pat Boylan, Milwaukee tonight. With the Pacers up 3-1 with a chance to wrap that up. So that's coming up at 9 o'clock tonight. If you're listening live, if you're listening on the podcast, well, you probably already know who won. Kevin Lee, Kurt Cavan, Elijah Robertson in studio. So everybody is always trying to figure out, how do we get attention? And this doesn't just apply to IndyCar. It's kind of in general, especially if you're in the public eye. If you are a personality, if you are thinking about your brand, there are millions of dollars spent on strategies and buying ads and buying impressions and seeing what kind of reach we can get. How can we figure out how to get noticed? Or you can just have the perfect accident and the mannequin hanging as one of the very unique displays in the mind of George Barber, art, if you will, at Barber Motorsports Park, falls off its tether, lands on the side of the racetrack, looks like a woman. The first visual we have is, oh my goodness, is that a person on the edge of the... Oh, it just got run over. Oh, it's Georgina. It's the mannequin. I haven't done the math yet or counted, but somebody probably has. But I saw Awful Announcing wrote 3 or 4 stories about this on social media. They have a very, very large following. So did Barstool Sports. It was featured with full audio on SportsCenter. How does IndyCar get on SportsCenter? It seems we need a blow-up doll to fall on the racetrack and a car to run over it. That's it. That's the only way, because otherwise we weren't getting on it. There you go. Let's stop the meetings. Let's have more falling mannequins and Bernie Ecclestone water cannons.
You know, the word I was looking for, and I've really been looking for it for 2 days. What was the word that I came up with? And it was unnerving at first.
Yes.
In fact, it's still unnerving for a couple reasons. One, not only did it look remarkably, let me backtrack. That thing has been hanging there for a long time. I can't remember if it was there from the inception of the IndyCar series, racing there in what, 2010, 2011, but it's been there a long time. I never gave it a second thought after the first year or two that I knew it was there. Never really thought about it falling. But when it fell, there was this unnerving feeling that I got. And then, you know, the idea that it had one of its, I guess it would be its left arm, broke by the race car, that was unnerving. And then the idea that had that fallen in the middle of the racetrack, this really could have been damaging to the race cars, to the race drivers. This could have been a really big situation had it fallen maybe 4 or 5 feet more to the right.
I don't know this, but I think it used to be more directly over the track.
I think so, too. I think so,
and
too.
Because of that reason, they moved it more onto the edge. And I believe she hit the grass. So she
did.
She fell. She fell probably a yard off the track, but because she's 6 feet tall and has her arms straight up, she's 8 feet tall. So part of her ended up on the edge of the track. So I think they were preventative in that, that she was not going to fall in the middle of the track. But yeah, that's the first thought. And then I thought, hey, we've got another reason why the aero screen is good, because what if she fell in the cockpit? You know, that might cause someone to crash if it lands on top of your hands, because I'm going to guess this thing has a little bit of weight to it, that it's not 12 pounds. Even if it's 12 pounds, if it falls from that high, that's going to startle you. If it's more than 3 pounds,
which, you know, it is
not a blow up doll, and it's not a blow up doll, it's a mannequin, because it has to be able to withstand the weather. Yeah, that could have been bad. So that's why they had it there. And my guess is she's going to move another few feet off. The other good thing is, luckily, it seems all the drivers are aware of Georgina, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Anybody who's been there with any regularity knows about this mannequin.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Hi, this is Felix Rosenquist, and you're listening to Trackside.
Hour number two, Trackside, 93.5, 107.5, The Fan in Indianapolis, one day away from the month of May. Thanks for staying with us tonight. Ahead of Pacers basketball, coming up an hour from now, we get set for Game 5. Mark Boyle, Eddie Gill, Pat Boylan, Milwaukee tonight, with the Pacers up 3-1 with a chance to wrap that up. So that's coming up at 9 o'clock tonight. If you're listening live, if you're listening on the podcast, well, you probably already know who won. Kevin Lee, Kurt Cavan, Elijah Robertson in studio. So everybody is always trying to figure out, how do we get attention? And this doesn't just apply to IndyCar. It's kind of in general, especially if you're in the public eye. If you are a personality, if you are thinking about your brand, there are millions of dollars spent on strategies and buying ads and buying impressions and seeing what kind of reach we can get. How can we figure out how to get noticed? Or you can just have the perfect accident and the mannequin hanging as one of the very unique displays in the mind of George Barber, art, if you will, at Barber Motorsports Park, falls off its tether, lands on the side of the racetrack, looks like a woman. The first visual we have is, oh my goodness, is that a person on the edge of the... Oh, it just got run over. Oh, it's Georgina. It's the mannequin. I haven't done the math yet or counted, but somebody probably has. But I saw Awful Announcing wrote 3 or 4 stories about this on social media. They have a very, very large following. So did Barstool Sports. It was featured with full audio on SportsCenter. How does IndyCar get on SportsCenter? It seems we need a blow-up doll to fall on the racetrack and a car to run over it. That's it. That's the only way, because otherwise we weren't getting on it. There you go. Let's stop the meetings. Let's have more falling mannequins and Bernie Ecclestone water cannons.
You know, the word I was looking for, and I've really been looking for it for 2 days. What was the word that I came up with? And it was unnerving at first.
Yes.
In fact, it's still unnerving for a couple reasons. One, not only did it look remarkably, let me backtrack. That thing has been hanging there for a long time. I can't remember if it was there from the inception of the IndyCar series, racing there in what, 2010, 2011, but it's been there a long time. I never gave it a second thought after the first year or two that I knew it was there. Never really thought about it falling. But when it fell, there was this unnerving feeling that I got. And then, you know, the idea that it had one of its, I guess it would be its left arm, broke by the race car, that was unnerving. And then the idea that had that fallen in the middle of the racetrack, this really could have been damaging to the race cars, to the race drivers. This could have been a really big situation had it fallen maybe 4 or 5 feet more to the right.
I don't know this, but I think it used to be more directly over the track.
I think so, too.
Because of that reason, they moved it more onto the edge. And I believe she hit the grass. So she
did.
She fell probably a yard off the track. But because she's 6 feet tall and has her arms straight up, she's 8 feet tall. So part of her ended up on the edge of the track. So I think they were preventative in that she was not going to fall in the middle of the track. But yeah, that's the first thought. And then I thought, hey, we've got another reason why the aero screen is good, because what if she fell in the cockpit? You know, that might cause someone to crash if it lands on top of your hands, because I'm going to guess this thing has a little bit of weight to it, that it's not 12 pounds. Even if it's 12 pounds, if it falls from that high, that's going to startle you. If it's more than 3 pounds,
which, you know,
it's not a blow up doll, and it's not a blow up doll, it's a mannequin, because it has to be able to withstand the weather. Yeah, that could have been bad. So that's why they had it there. And my guess is she's going to move another few feet off. The other good thing is, luckily, it seems all the drivers are aware of Georgina, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Anybody who's been there with any regularity knows about this mannequin. I mean, it's like, you know, knowing that there's a spider at the edge of turn five. We all know it's there.
But then the new guy is the one that hits her.
Yeah.
So I've seen the onboard with commentary from Pietro Fittipaldi, who was the one going by, and he didn't seem startled. I think his response was something like, yeah, the lady just fell. Not, oh my God, a lady fell, which is what I would have been thinking. But then Luca Giotto is doing his first IndyCar race, and I hope someone told him about this, because I believe it's his car that hit. So I need to, if somebody has seen a comment from Luca, whether he was aware of this and what he thought. I was not in Luca's section. I honestly have not met him yet. So I did not speak to him over the weekend. If he is back, he's back at IMS. So we'll hopefully get a chance to chat with him there. But yeah, so that was one thing is, you know, let's stop figuring out how to get attention. Let's just have randomly absurd things happen. Is what we need to start working on, right?
Well, I
can't
bet
do it every race, but we're going to need to do it every 4 or 5 races.
Yeah,
The other big moment in Barber history that got the next most impressions was me asking a driver about wetting himself in the car.
Yeah, those are
the two moments.
That was your key highlight there. You know, I think all joking aside, and I think we have laughed it off pretty well because it ended well, but I bet there were some people none too pleased. And you talk about maybe it's going back and in a maybe a different location, a little more to the edge. I would say IndyCar might say, no, it doesn't need, there's nothing going to be hanging from that bridge when we come back. I would surmise that's, you can have that up there for 11 months of the year, but it's coming down when we test and when we race.
I'm glad, because you're right, it could have been serious. I'm glad that the authorities still had a sense of humor about it and decided, let's make the most of this, bringing it into the media center. And Scott McLaughlin, one, being a good enough sport to pose, and then some fans posing outside as well. And I've seen somebody posted the actual video. You know, Scott sat down. It's not like he's hanging out there. Scott also was like, yeah, I'm not sure that I really want to look like this is what I'm doing. But he literally looked like he was sat down for about 2 seconds. You get your picture. I'm getting up. I'll play ball here. But yeah,
he's a good sport.
He's a great sport. But he's also the thing is, whether he's there 2 seconds or 10 minutes, picture is the picture.
Sure.
And he got, I'm sure, more impressions from that than he did from being on the podium. So,
well, those things
take advantage of opportunities.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. When odd things like that happen, I knew it was going to be SportsCenter material and awful announcing and every other type of place that features, clicks and views and so forth. So I knew that was going to be, I mean, it goes without saying, but, and that would have been the case, whether that would have been an NBA game or an NFL game, that would have overshadowed the actual sporting event, because the sporting event happens. I mean, I get your point that we, as a series, you know, search for opportunities to be in mainstream events, but that would have, had that happened at the Super Bowl, it still would have been played very highly in the recap of the Super Bowl. You know, had she fallen from the catwalk at a football stadium, it still would have had SportsCenter type lead off. So
yep. Let's go in and sneak in some Xbox questions. From
I love it
Twitter.
When you do that. The Xbox.
What is the Xbox? It's X. Yeah. It's X. I'm working on transitioning myself because it will always be Twitter in my mind, and I miss the old Twitter. But I understand Elon Musk is better at making money than I am, so who am I to question his tactics on this? I miss Tweetbot. I miss Tweetbot being able to filter out the ads.
Yeah.
And I would happily pay... Now, you talk about I've paid enough for subscriptions for television. I don't know what the number is. I think that was like a one-time purchase of like $6. I would easily do 10 a year. I'd probably do 10 a month to have the old Tweetbot back. So Elon should monetize that. He could just sell it directly. I think they do. They do have a subscriber situation that does cut out, it said, some ads where you're basically buying the blue check mark, and I have not done that because it didn't say all ads, and I don't know if it will hold your place like the other did. So
that's anyway. The thing, it doesn't hold its place, and when I'm looking for something, like, it's scrambled, or the order is scrambled all of a sudden, and it's just frustrating.
Well, no, you got to choose up top. You have a choice of,
yeah, I know,
For you or following. You need to be on the following side. But what I always liked is I could go from my phone to my iPad and it would remember the place.
That's right.
I go back and forth a lot. So first world problems. I get it. Let's see. Paul Henry asks, didn't power change out or an engine or change the drivetrain? Why is there no penalty for that? No, there's no longer a penalty. There's not an automatic penalty for an engine change. Formula One has some things that if you change the gearbox and things like that, but in any car, you can change different parts to the car, and you can even change the car and maintain your position as long as you don't change the driver. The engine penalties come into play once you use up your allotment for the season. So we're not going to see any of those unless it's going really bad until probably July, I suppose, maybe June, but it's usually July, August, and September. What is it? Is it 4 or 5 engines you get throughout the year? I forget. One of those two. But anyway, he's not at that point yet. That's why there is no penalty. Chad Bunch, looking at overall performance, Pato at St. Pete aside, is McLaren even really a second-tier team? Seems like Andretti and Shank are better.
Well, Shank's results
right
are better.
Now they are.
Yeah. It's you know, they obviously Pato ran well at St. Pete, and these things are cyclical. I mean, let's get them on an oval. Let's see. Well, you know, they've looked really good at Indy the last couple years. I suspect they'll be good again. I don't know if the loss of Felix was, you know, a backbreaker for them. I suspect they're good enough to overcome that. I can't imagine they're not. But, you know, they've had some tough times, too. I mean, the 6 car has been different driver. They went into the mm-hmm. season thinking they were going to have David Malukas. One of the news items is he's out. You know, they've ran, 2 other drivers, Callum Ilott and Pocher. And they're going to continue to be, you know, different drivers as we move forward. So it's not been easy. That's been a distraction for the IndyCar team as well.
So you're right that it's cyclical, and they might come back at the Indy road course and have 2 cars in the fast 6 and win the race and all is good. But I would say this team doesn't traditionally have patience. It's a different environment. It is more of the Formula One world where you must deliver. You know, you watch Drive to Survive and you watch Zach Brown getting dressed down by his superior of, I think some of that was for show. They knew the cameras were there, but it's very blunt. I think that was somewhat real. It's, we better produce or somebody's going to pay for this. And that's the philosophy I suspect that Zach has in this front. That's why they release drivers quickly. They hire drivers. They can fire drivers. And Zach Brown was at Long Beach. I did not see him, but I'm told some people that spoke with him got the distinct impression that it's going to need to get better really quickly, that this is not what we are expecting. So just something to monitor that, you know, they already made a change, and we'll get to that coming up in a moment. What's next for the six and everything? And that's different than the results. That's circumstance and uncertainty that they had decided they had to move on. But that team expects results. And with the resources and the budget and the money they are spending, the people spending that money or arranging for that spend are expecting more. They are not expecting to be any debates. Are we one of the big two, three, four? They are expecting to be there now at this point.
And I would suspect that most of the organization, this is a huge generality, and I'm going to probably have to walk it back at some point, but I would suspect that from the European side, that they would expect to clean up around here, that this would not be a difficult endeavor to tackle, or at least we ought to see pretty consistent championship contender championships.
Race, you mean, wins. Their perspective?
Yes, their perspective on IndyCar. Like,
come on, this is they think of this as a minor league. This
exactly.
is F2. Surely you can beat these people with the technology at your disposal and being able to talk to the UK about what we want to do. Yeah, you may be right there. Zach Brown is smart enough to understand that. That's what helps everybody's cause, that he is American. He's been, if not around IndyCar, close enough to it over the years from his work on the marketing side, that he gets that it's hard. You can't just spend your way into running up the front, because you're trying to beat Penske and Ganassi, who also have big budgets, and Andretti, who also has big budgets, and they've been doing this for a long time. And Rahal Letterman-Lanigan has a pretty decent budget, and they're still sort of in the same camp as you, looking for more consistency and more results. And even though you're not super happy at this point, you know, you do still have, let's call it a second, a gift win, second, whatever. You've got a legit podium in a race this season, and you had legit speed at Barber. Pato had a rough day. Pato had a rough day. He had just hit a teammate the race before, and he doesn't want to hit Christian Lundgaard, so he spins himself, and then he gets two more penalties later on.
He's had two tough races. I mean, you alluded to it, but you said he had a tough day. He's had two tough days now, and he just got a big, yep, big pot of money. And, you know, you say Zach Brown certainly knows this, how competitive this sport is, but he, you know, he's got a huge, and I would consider him a friend, but he's got a huge ego, and he expects to be a Penske as well, a Penske Ganassi type team in this sport as well. And, you know, they just signed Pato, but Rossi's program hadn't been going the way that you would have expected from early in his career. And the six car's a mess for a different reason. And, you know, you could see wholesale changes both places.
The wheel literally fell off of Alexander Rossi. Yeah. That's how it's going for him at this point. So, you know, I know he really likes his new engineer and feels about promise, but as we've said, decisions are going to be made by at least June, most likely, on the free agent camp. I don't know how all this that's happened here in the last week impacts Joseph Newgarden. You know, I was starting to think he's probably going to stay, but I don't know. And does this change anything? Does this limit his other options? has he already signed? And if he hasn't, is that bad? Probably not.
You know, I kind of thought,
because I think they're circling the wagons. I think now he's Team Penske. You know, they are all in this together at this point. So I think I'm at the point now, and he may have already decided. This may have been done before this, but if he hadn't, my guess is this makes it more likely that he is staying where he's at. Others would say they put him in a bad position and he might be more interested in moving. I do not know. It's trying to get in the mind of someone who doesn't really share a lot of his mindset. So it's probably not worth the 40 seconds I just said speaking about that, because we don't know.
It's silly radio chatter, and I get that.
Yeah.
But that's why we do a show, and that's why people like to listen and think about it. But I was really antenna up on Joseph's press conference on Friday to see if I could gain any sense for which direction he's leaning career-wise. Because if he threw the team under the bus, then I thought he was off somewhere else. But he didn't do that. And so, you know, the bottom line is I didn't glean anything from what Joseph said relative to his next, you know, season and where he drives. I didn't glean anything from that. But I certainly went into that press conference thinking, I wonder if he'll tip his hand at all. And he didn't, to my knowledge. But anyway, there's my 40 seconds of silly radio chatter that probably not worth anything either.
You know, the silly season is obviously silly all season long now, because we still have two TBDs in the current season we're in.
Yep.
So you then look ahead to next year and you're talking about top free agents like Christian Lundgaard and Newgarden and potentially Rinus VK, who looked quick over the weekend. And you've got a new team coming in Prema that has a big budget, and Rossi is driven for them. You know, maybe he may decide, you know what, this isn't working out great here. Maybe I'm Felix Rosenquist and this car doesn't suit me. I want to go try something else. Who's the engineer going to be? I like that engineer. I don't know. But all of those things are in play as we look ahead to next season. Todd in Phoenix says, during the broadcast from Barber, there was a shot of the McLaren pit where you could see sponsor branding from Velo along with a nicotine is addictive warning across the top. Are tobacco sponsors permitted in racing again?
So I didn't see that one in terms of what it said, you know, and where the money comes from. But the answer.
So I think this is a gray area. Traditional tobacco companies are not allowed again, but and I am far from understanding Velo and everything involved, but there's no tobacco, right? There's nicotine.
I don't, yeah.
So I believe I've seen that before, that has to be displayed, and this is not the first. This is like a vape, right?
I think so. But that's, so we've not seen that. I don't live in that world. Cars.
I don't either. We've seen this on other cars before. I think this is sort of, to put it mildly, yes, it's legal. Could you put Marlboro on the car? No, you cannot. But this, because it is not a traditional cigarette, advertising is allowed. So that's the difference in this. This is not new. Velo's been on the car for a couple of years, and I believe that's even in small print on the logo that's on the car that says nicotine is addictive, and I'm sure that's part of the agreement that they have to do to make this available. John Berger asked this to a few people. It says, Joseph Newgard admitted he messed up on the penalty and people are giving them hell. Yet Michigan cheated, playing dumb, and people are throwing them a parade. I'm confused. Well, I'm not, because IndyCar, unless I missed it, are they running the Big Ten or the NCAA? Are they?
No.
Oh, okay. So that it's not the same thing. and the Big Ten doesn't have any say. Now, in the court of public opinion, I know you're an Ohio State fan, you know, John. I get it. Since your Twitter handle is AS2 Buckeye, and you'd like to see Michigan disparaged and kicked out of the NCAA forever. And I get it. I'd be annoyed too. But that's their world. And most of the people that you tweeted on this have no knowledge of what you're talking about, because they don't necessarily watch college football. I happen to know what you're talking about, but it's not the same thing. Let's see what else. Oh, I see we were live on Peacock for the Indy Next Race. Always a reminder that a mic is live. Luckily, nothing bad was said other than, can't hear you. I can't hear you. We're on, that kind of thing. Yeah.
I missed that. I missed that. But on the Indy Next front, by the way, I'm really happy for Jacob Abel. Yep. You know, he has been competitive. He has knocked on the door, and he didn't just have a Sunday drive at the park. He had Nolan Siegel right there within striking distance throughout that race and hit his marks, didn't make a mistake. Nolan didn't either. Both those guys deserve some kudos for the performance. And good for Jacob. I almost texted him, started texting him Sunday night and didn't. But he's good for him.
You can congratulate him next week as we'll have him on the show next week.
Oh, good.
So, yeah. So we'll talk to him next week. That's one of the news items. If you didn't watch Peacock in one of the practice sessions, I went to go find Bill Abel and just said, all right, let's find out. Rather than me just guesstimate and speculate, you tell me what's happening with your Indy 500 program. It's either going to be 34 or 35. And he told me, we're still trying with RC Enerson. That looks like that's about the only path that is possible. We need to know pretty soon. RC's got some good prospects for a primary sponsor for us to find the budget. He did not give me a specific deadline, but obviously it's really soon on that front. So that, and then I said, okay, my theory has been you could potentially, and I said also, I know some of the other people that were potential candidates, and they've told me that they are no longer candidates. Is that true? And he said, yes. So I said, what about Jacob Abel? I theorized that could be an option. He said, you know, we really thought long and hard about that. And he kind of was saying Jacob would really like to do it. And we somewhat convinced him we should just wait and do it properly. So he said, we kicked that around for a while and maybe even doing more than just the Indy 500 with him this year, but like kind of like what Nolan Siegel is doing, but decided let's go about it when he can fully focus on it. We have a chance to win the Indy Next Championship. So let's do that and nothing else. He said, we have a car that still needs to be put together and still needs all the parts and everything. He said, if we're going to do that, it needs to happen. And he looked at his watch and just said, now. So he said, it's going to be RC. If we do it, it's going to be RC, but no guarantee that it is RC. So that is still TBD, whether we have a 34th or 35th. So hopefully the budget comes together and we see RC Enerson make another run in the Abel Motorsports car this year in May.
Yeah, they all accounted for them. You know, they acquitted themselves or showed represented themselves very well last year. So good for them.
Peeking on one last Twitter question. This came up last week. Bob Shirley said, if Newgarden disqualified, how did he get a point? They did not use push to pass in qualifying. So he gets the point for pole. It's only the race. So he wasn't disqualified from the event. He was disqualified from the race. So that's why he got one back. Oh, and the question that Mikkel Ellison asked last week, or maybe it's Michael, about using all three compounds. He said, I meant black, green, and red. And I responded to him, well, green and red are really the same. Yes, one's Waiulia made out of more natural substances, but the idea is that it is the same tire. And there's, oh, okay. So it's already confusing enough to fans to explain the reds and the blacks. We're not going to add in a green. It's the same as that one. It's just a different color. Two's enough. Two's enough on that front. All right, we'll talk future of the 6 McLaren car and what's happening there next and more next on Trackside.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Hi, this is Graham Rahal, and you're listening to Trackside on 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan.
Okay, let's get to news since the race has been completed. I think we woke up Monday morning with, especially those of us that got home at 1 a.m. or so from the trip, with some immediate news coming out very shortly after we woke up, and that it was David Malukas's time with Arrow McLaren Racing is over before it really started. So I got part of this right and part of it wrong. I said as recently as last week, I still thought he would get a chance in the car at some point. But as uncomfortable as it was, we also said very early on, you know, once you have opened the door and let someone else get in your seat, there is the chance that you then become one of those fill-in drivers. I think Nathan Brown of the Indianapolis Star wrote this. I don't know if it was in the release or not, but might have come down to some legal issues. So, you know, some contracts have, if you miss a certain number of days or events, they can void your contract. His understanding is that this one was four races. And once you got past the four races, it became very easy. And there may have even been some thought that if you don't make the break now, maybe you set yourself up for some type of legal action if you go beyond that. I don't know. That's beyond my level of understanding. But just from a competitive standpoint, you know, I think they just felt like we don't know at this point. And I asked David on Saturday morning, and I even noticed, so I asked him, you know, what was going on. And he told me, I've got the pins out. And I don't really know where I'm at. I'm going to get imaging done on Monday, and then we'll be able to see. We'll certainly work on flexibility, and we'll hopefully start working on strength. And I said, maybe I should look at, because I wrote this down after the fact, but, you know, is there a chance for the GP, or have you been ruled out? And he essentially said, yeah, there's a chance. And then someone tweeted that on Twitter, and he said, no, it's very unlikely I'm going to race. He didn't tell me that. I gave him the chance to tell me that, and then maybe he had already been told, I'm done. I get the impression he didn't, though, until Sunday night, because he still tweeted about Georgina during the race, and then it was Sunday night where his avatar is now blank. So I guess he took his picture off his social media. He didn't lock down his Twitter. So I feel for David. This is unfortunate. It has happened to other drivers before, but it happened at the absolute worst time for him. And from the team standpoint, they still don't know when he's going to be ready, and they are dealing with drivers that need to work out their schedule. So we don't know who's going to be in the car in the Indy GP. We don't believe it's going to be Callum Ilott unless they have gone to Ilott's camp and said, hey, here's what we can offer you. Because he is supposed to be racing in Team Jota Porsche hypercar, I forget where, in the World Endurance Championship somewhere. He's not available that weekend. If they offered him the rest of the season, and if I'm Callum Ilott, I probably want a guaranteed contract for next season and really look at the fine print. Otherwise, I don't know that I'm quitting this job if it's for the rest of this season, because I think he will have other options. I think he can fulfill this contract. He also drove for Prema. So that's that. If he's at the Grand Prix, it's because they've worked out an agreement. Probably more likely is if I'm McLaren, I'm not offering him the full-time contract. This is my opinion, unless they have seen something internally. I want to use this to try out more. I want more from, as his teammates call him, Teddy Porkchop, Teo Porcher, who didn't have an awesome weekend. Not surprising, because this is very difficult. Also doesn't help that he got punted by his teammate on the last lap of the race. But he finished the laps and didn't fall out of the seat. And IMS would be a good opportunity to see where he's at.
I think
it's a straightforward track, as a European feel. Newbies come in there and can do well. If he's good and the car is good, he can do well there, so they can assess him, and he's not going to be available for every race. So I would put him in Ilott, and I haven't looked at the math to see if they can both work out to be available. You know, at some point, they're going to have to make some picks for the ovals. If they're thinking about Porcher, they'll need him to do an oval to decide if he is a long-term candidate. Maybe they've already signed Christian Lundgaard, and this is for the third seed, or it's, you know, between these guys and Alexander Rossi. A lot of things are in play. I would be surprised if Callum Ilott is not driving the sixth car for the Indy 500. So that's kind of where I see it.
So my gut tells me Porsche runs the Sancio Grand Prix, Ilott runs the Indy 500, and Lundgaard has been signed for next year. That's what that tells me. We'll see how he shakes out. But I think if Lundgaard has been, you know, behind the scenes, been the driver that people are talking about, and he has looked really good, and I think that's a McLaren type of guy. I just think it is. And
makes sense. That makes sense. And maybe he hasn't signed because maybe he can't sign yet. There are clauses in contracts, but they feel confident enough that he is headed in their direction. Now, they've gotten in trouble with that in the past, although they had a signed contract with Alex Palou. You know, if they knew they weren't going to have Alex Palou, they'd probably still have Felix Rosenqvist. And then other timing, they would have had Callum Ilott. That's how Malukas got the opportunity in the first place.
If they were going to have Ilott, though, I think if Ilott was their choice for 2025, they would have bought him out. And I just don't think that's the case. I think Porsche
will
drive.
They might still do that, but I don't think I would. Because I want to see more Porsche.
Yeah.
And I want to see more of Rossi. Because if you're targeting Lundgaard, then it becomes, who's in the other car? Is it Rossi? Is it Ilott? Is it Porsche? Is Newgarden off the table? You know, all of those are still in play. So I think it's still going to be a plug and play, a race by race, and they'll come up with a schedule. Maybe they can announce for the rest of the season, but I'd want to see one more race from Porsche. I think you'll really have a good read as to what he is at that point. Now for David Malukas, one, we don't know when he's going to be healthy. Two, is there a chance he goes back to Dale Coyne Racing? They still have many, many events available. And they come at a price. So unfortunately, his dad is going to potentially have to fund those again. I don't believe there are any just bring your helmet type seats. But I think you can get a pretty good discount there at this point. So depending on how that situation ended, we might keep an eye on that. If he's healthy and wants a chance to prove himself, now he might also say, no, that's not going to do me any good. I left there for a reason, and I want to see how it's going. So unless Jack Harvey starts going well, I don't think I take that if I'm David Malukas. I think I take the season off, and I start working on next year right now.
I don't think he needs to, you know, there aren't people – nothing has happened since he left that team last year that would tell you that he's not capable when he's healthy. So I don't think he has to jump into a seat to prove himself.
Unless he just really wants to,
but
it's not great going, you know, 18 months without driving. So he might want to, that might be it, but I also want it to be a competent car.
He did test during the offseason though.
He did a little bit. Not much.
Yeah.
Hybrid. Yeah. Maybe that's an opportunity. Some hybrid testing with where he's headed in 25. Maybe someone leaves. I'm just throwing this against the wall because I don't think this is necessarily likely. But what if Christian Lundgaard lets Rahal Letterman-Lanigan know he's leaving and they decide they like David Malukas and they let him test the car in the hybrid in the summer? Or what if he comes to an agreement with Ed Carpenter Racing for 2025?
And which we thought was a strong possibility last year.
That's one of my theories that, you know, Rinus VK's car was blank for the second week in a row. Most of the sponsorship on there are Todd Ault companies. So everything beyond Tony George, if Stuart Reed is still involved, you know, that's kind of friends and family investment right now. There are some supporting partners, but the rest is on Todd Ault. So that's putting a lot of stock in that one. If I'm Ed, I am interested in that relationship with HMD Trucking. And maybe not. Maybe he doesn't want a partner in that regard. But they did it a few years ago with Scuderia Corsa. So and they were close, real close, last year and maybe even a year or two before that. So that's the one I would keep an eye on. If the budget is there, could they run a third car later in the season in the Ed Carpenter car later in the season on road and street courses? Just and one, maybe just to kind of see how he fits in the program, maybe not even sign for 25, but hey, let's just try each other out, see if we feel good about this. So all of those could potentially be possibilities moving forward in that regard. So I feel awful for David. Good fun kid. I love the video that somebody found on TikTok of him, you know, wiping down a car, trying to do what he could over the weekend. This is terrible, but he will get another chance. Luckily, it's not good for anyone, but luckily it happened to someone that was only going to get one chance. And we've seen the drivers that come through that have to win scholarships to make it and have no money. And when their one chance doesn't work out, they may not get another chance. David is not in that camp. One, he's good. Two, there is budget available. So we will see David Malukas again in IndyCar, if not this year, certainly at the beginning of 2025. All right, what else do we need to cover that has not been covered, that has nothing to do with push to pass gate? Oh, I know people have asked this. I asked Jay Fry. So it did become public that IndyCar went back and looked at 23, and they found no irregularities. And then so I asked Jay, I said, hey, I'm getting questions, and I believe I know the answer, but I'd rather it come from you. Is there any chance there is an impact to the Indy 500? And he said, no. You know, there's no push to pass there. This did not impact the Indy 500. So we have that out there. What else in the Twitterverse do we have? There was one I know. Oh, yes, who we thought would be in the number six car for the 500. I think Ilott. Sage Karam stirred everybody up by putting an emoji of news coming with the little Formula car race car. Maybe it's because they don't make a NASCAR. Do they? They probably don't have a NASCAR race car emoji, do they?
How do they not have a NASCAR race emoji? Anyway.
I don't have the full list of emojis that some people have, but that's still my... If he's driving the number six...
No, he's not driving.
Shocker of shockers. Yeah, because Sage has pretty much moved on from this. I'm sure he would accept a ride if it's offered, but that's what it would be. He has determined that my best path is what budget and what partners we have, use it to run in NASCAR, and he's had some success in NASCAR. Elijah Poe also asked, with this push-to-pass controversy, Penske seemed sure motivated at Barber. Yeah, they did all they could do. I don't know that winning, it's not going to change anybody's mind, but it certainly helps the dynamics in the tent, right? Because number one, the boss is not happy. I don't think, I mean, I know people say that Roger Penske knows everything going on. I find it hard to believe that Roger Penske is involved in this. I think it's very plausible that Tim Cindric knew nothing of this and found out about it. I think it is very possible that Tim Cindric is not staring at when push to pass is used on a restart. It's a different question. How somebody else didn't notice it. And that goes back to, I think, why Newgarden says somehow we convinced ourselves, some of us on the two team, that it was now available on restarts, because that's what it takes for this to be a pure mistake, because the Chevy engine tech is going to see that either live or going over it and is going to say, hey, what's going on here? And he's going to be told, nope, rule change. Yeah, the memo just came out. Oh, okay. And that's the end of that. And he mentions it to Joseph. So there's your, if highly improbable, still possible scenario in that. So I cannot definitively say, I can't say they're not telling the truth. They could be telling the truth. And that's all we have at this point. And I think pretty highly of Joseph Newgarden as a competitor. So that's where we are. So anyway, that's all they could do is win. And they did it. Makes life easier for everybody. Didn't make it easier for Joseph. It was a rough weekend.
You know, it was a rough weekend for way changing the subject. Rinus VK looked really quick at this racetrack again. He's been very well out there. And then comes in, starts last in first corner, runs into people with his aggression. Be interesting to see how his 2025 ends up. What do people think of him? You know, should he have more than he's had at this point? He's looked super on several occasions, and then he's nowhere sometimes. So it'll be interesting.
Part of that also is going to be evaluating the team.
Yep.
You know, the others are going to say, how much of this is Rinus? How much is it the team? And I do not know.
It would be a fascinating deep dive with others who have perceived him one way or the other, because this was a classic Rinus VK weekend. Looked faster than anyone. What led that first, was it the first practice or the second practice? And then started in the back because he didn't get to run qualifying, and then runs into somebody. So tough weekend.
All right, we'll see what we miss coming up in just a moment. Trackside 93.5, 107.5, The Fan.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Hi, this is Elio Castroneves, and you're listening to Trackside.
Okay, final segment, not enough time to do him justice, but I wanted to mention Wally Dallenbach, who some of our listeners will remember. First, a very successful driver, 60s, 70s, even early 80s, won five IndyCar races, almost won the 1975 Indianapolis 500, a late mechanical, and a really well-respected chief steward. My friend Robin Miller and others would speak very highly of him, as do drivers from the 80s, 90s, and early 2000s. I didn't know Wally, but I know his son, Wally Jr., very well, and he will be missed. So just wanted to pay respect to him as well. Okay, we're out of time. We'll see you next Monday night at 7 o'clock, and it's Pacers playoff basketball coming up next.